Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends, and welcome. Progressive News Network presents Less Confusion, More Facts.
There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and tell you why. We will beat them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world to come and don't you see?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Today was a fantastic day, and I got good news from our good friends at the Palm Beach Now. They had a fantastic event today. We had so many people there, it was incredible. Fantastic turnout. They had to bring in new tables, and then more tables, and then more tables. It was a fantastic turnout. Seems that people are concerned. And guess what? They're doing the good work every day. We want to congratulate the Susan B. Anthony Award winner, Ms. Judith Seltzer of Planned Parenthood. Bravo, Ms. Seltzer. She gave a great speech. We'll be doing some excerpts from her speech and some of the other speeches next week. So make sure you tune in for our anti-war show next week. We've got some great guests tonight. We've got part two of the Susan Nylon interview we recorded. It was fantastic. She was a great guest, and you know she's doing good work every week on her show Monday through Friday. Make sure you tune in some of her shows. I also want to thank some of our other good progressive broadcasters. Diane G. of Wild Wild Left. Make sure you tune into her show. Amy Tidd, the Amy Tidd Show, Saturday mornings at 10. Also, of course, our good friend and broadcaster, Gwen Holden Berry of There Be Monsters. Another show that you should tune into. She's on through the week, Monday through Friday. And, of course, she does a special Sunday show, too, an hour just before our show. Make sure you tune in and support these fine progressive broadcasters. They are putting out the word. You'll never get the facts straight through corporate media. We know that. In fact, our voices won't even be heard on corporate media. But if you want the facts, you want to know what progressives are doing every day to make this a better world, you tune in to progressive broadcasters. You're going to find out the facts. Factoid number one. Interesting rumor came to our ears over at the Palm Beach Now event. Something interesting up in leadership in the Democratic Party. You make sure you listen in good, because we're going to have the rumor mill announcement a little later in the show. So look for a leadership shakeup at the Democratic Party of Florida. Fantastic stuff. Movement for a progressive into Democratic Party leadership. Check it out. Also, there's a story going around in progressive circles. Senators are terrified at the way the government's been interpreting the USA Patriot Act. Senator Wyden and Senator Utah have been petitioning Eric Holder. Let the people know what you're doing with this Patriot Act. It seems that they are very concerned, and they're the ones that know. So make sure you find out. Call and write your senators. Find out what the heck are they doing with that USA Patriot Act. Seems that something's afoot in that arena, too. And also, as promised, I've got some news for you from the Fukushima latest update. And, of course, as you know, we go right to the source. We go to the engineering news. We go to radiation experts who are sifting through the baloney that comes out of TEPCO. And we're going to talk more about that in just a second. But I also want to go over some of the guests we have tonight. So in addition to Susan Nylon up top, and we've got Tara Woodruff, longtime community activist. She's going to talk about some of the things she's been working on. And then toward the end of the hour, we're going to have Harriet Learman on, a wonderful progressive broadcaster who's been on the air for years. She's going to tell us what she's up to these days, so make sure you stick around through the whole show. And don't forget that rumor mill announcement of a progressive making headway into Democratic Party leadership here in the Democratic Party of Florida. How about that, friends? Comes from a very high source. Okay, this news from the Fukushima front. Cesium-134 has been detected in plankton 600 kilometers from Fukushima, 3 months after the meltdown. Scientists say it's necessary to look at the bioaccumulation. Radioactive cesium, believed to have been released during the crisis at Fukushima No. 1 nuclear power plant, has been found in plankton some 600 kilometers east of the facility, according to Japan-U.S. joint research team. Findings will be reported in a conference on Oceanographic Society of Japan set for Tuesday. The research team collected animal plankton at 17 locations between 30 and 600 kilometers east of the plant in June last year, and 3 months after the March 11th earthquake. Cesium-137 was detected in all the collected plankton. Dry state was found to contain 0.3 to 56.4 becquerels per kilogram. Before the crisis showed, the plankton contained between 0.1 and 0.4 becquerels, a little bit of an increase there. The latest survey, the team also found cesium-134, which has a two-year half-life in plankton, the same levels of cesium-137. Bioaccumulation is to be watched for in the food chain. Fukushima is also adversely affecting neighboring countries, said Nobel Prize-winning author. What is the most important ethic for humans to act on is to not destroy conditions that are necessary for the next generation to live, is the quote. At France's largest book fair, instead of promoting a novel, Nobel laureate Kenzaburo Oe used the spotlight to call for the immediate abolition of all nuclear power plants. Oe, who won the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1994, spoke at the Salon du Livre de Paris, one of the largest book fairs in Europe. What's the most important ethic for humans to act is to not destroy conditions that are necessary for the next generation to live, Oe said in calling for the end to nuclear power plants. The reason for the viewpoints on economy, science, and defense are just secondary ones. Oe participated in a discussion titled How to Confront a Catastrophe. The Nobel laureate strongly criticized Japan's government for moving toward restarting idle nuclear reactors. The Japanese government is not thinking about nuclear power plants seriously. In a meeting, Oe introduced farmers whose lands were contaminated by radioactive material because of the accident in Fukushima No. 1. The fishermen who were also deprived of their efforts. Melted fuel completely penetrated the concrete in another 15 hours at the GE Mark I, and it shows little decline in speed. The analysis in the GE Mark I reactor, the same used in Fukushima Daiichi, over 600 centimeters of concrete was penetrated in under 15 hours. That works out to 18 plus inches per hour. Okay, let's go to the Susan Nylon interview. Ladies and gentlemen, here it is, Susan Nylon. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Susan Nylon. Susan, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Richard.
Susan, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Oh, boy. I don't think you have that much time. I think you're only curious about the latter years since we started to get to know each other. I was your typical working mother, ran a company, and a few years back saw a big change in the security of our future. Mm-hmm. And I was running a construction company in Florida, and one by one I saw all the people that I had respected essentially go out of business like a house of cards. And this was around 2008.
Uh-huh.
And in addition to that, I have a young son at home who started at the age of 8 becoming very aware of the world around him.
Uh-huh.
And while I was basically trying to save my business, my son was coming home every day and letting me know what was happening outside of the small world that I had been existed in with. Not only he was very concerned about the plight of the polar bear, he became very active in a group called Greenpeace. He became very aware of politics around him. And every day he would come home and we'd sit at the dinner table and I'd ask him how his day was and he just wanted to talk about issues. And
God bless him.
I was like, here is an 8-year-old and I'm clueless and he knows more about things in the world around me. And, you know, I had been what I had thought was a quote-unquote activist in the sense, I call it an armchair activist, where
sure.
I'd get the emails and I'd like it or I'd respond it or I'd send off my email address in support or something. But that was essentially to the extent of it. But then at that point in time, I saw how passionate my son was and I thought, well, you know what, a good mother would indulge their son and get more involved with things of interest. And at that point, that's what he was interested in. So a chance meeting in a park one day with a young man who was actually a Greenpeace activist, started a conversation with my son, and before I knew it, my son was volunteering at Greenpeace, making phone calls to basically save the polar bear, and he worked on a campaign, and it was really sweet because he developed a great sense of pride and accomplishment. And then
that's super.
And then at that time, it was also the time of the elections, and I was a supporter of another candidate.
Uh-huh.
But my son came home and said, "You know, I really like this guy, Barack Obama." And I was like, "Well, who's that?" And I, you know, he every night would talk about it, and to the point where my husband and I said, my husband did the same thing. He said, "Yeah, I like him too." And at the same time, Joe Biden was coming to town, and I'm from that area.
Uh-huh.
I spent a lot of time in Delaware, and I've always admired him individually. And when I found out that he was coming to town, I thought, what a treat for my son to actually go to see a town hall.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled him out of school, took him there, and it was crowded. It was tons of people getting in line to get in, and while I'm standing in line to get in through the door, my son was running up to all the tables that they had out front and literally signing up to his name on everything, unbeknownst to me. And he went to the rally. He was very excited. He was like, it was like a rock concert for him.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyed it. And then shortly thereafter, he started getting the phone calls. I'd like to speak to Mr. Nylon. I'd like to speak to Mr. Nylon. And I'm like, do you realize he's 8? And but I continued to indulge him a little bit more and started to become his driver.
Uh-huh.
And so he worked on several campaigns, believe it or not, at that point in time, putting out signs,
yep,
door knocking, the whole bit. And eventually what happened is his responsibility came so great that because he's in school, I ended up also taking it. And that's
okay.
When I got started to say, you know what, enough. And one of the things I tease with my husband all the time, because I'm in my mid-40s, and I tease in front of him, and I say, yeah, most people, when they go through a midlife crisis, they buy a car or have an affair. I got involved in politics. And I became so vocal that my husband said, enough. I don't want to have another conversation about it. I don't want to hear about it. So by doing that, I started to write, because that was my way to basically communicate without driving my husband nuts. And that kind of led into, you know, I took a job as a journalist and, you know, started to write on the internet and just became very active. And one of the things that I learned is that you can't just spout an opinion. It has to be grounded in facts. And the more I started...
Well, it's because you're not a Republican.
Well, I'm not so quick to say, you know, Democrat, Republican, Independent, or anything like that, because I when I have a conversation with somebody and I sit down face to face and we talk about the issues, I generally find that there's some common ground, and this is my biggest frustration with our politicians who just want to win a race. They just want to get a vote, and they'll say whatever it takes to the person who's listening to say, yeah, I'm one of you. And the truth of the matter is that people who fall into that and believe that don't really spend any time finding out what the real issues are. They don't invest in getting to know the truth or the facts. And, you know, we had talked about before we went on air, you know, what is my one thing? What is my purpose? And initially, I spent a lot of time pushing renewable energy in the state of Florida because I thought the construction industry was so far gone that I thought, well, this is a great industry to segue into it.
Sure.
And so I spent a lot of time in Tallahassee talking to the politicians, working on pieces of legislation. I did a little bit of work with the EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund. I did a little work locally with communities that focused on making Sarasota a renewable energy community. But I realized that it wasn't enough. A lot of times I go up to Tallahassee and I find that instead of just talking about an issue that the congressman or the senator was going to vote on the next morning, I spent most of my time explaining to them what the issue was. In fact, I even had one senator who came up to me the next morning after our meeting because she was voting on a piece of legislation that I was asking her to take a look at. And she came running up and she said, oh, thank God I ran into you last night. I had no idea what that was about and I just cast my vote. And my mouth just dropped open because I'm like, it's your responsibility to know what you're voting on. But the truth of the matter is that you know, and I'm not going to totally bash everybody in Tallahassee, but they're not that invested in it either. And so they rely on their legislative aides. You have to educate the legislative aides. You have to educate the public. So if you ask me what my goal is just my goal is to just educate, to get the facts out there and let the person on the receiving end of those facts decide for themselves. Because I just think that, you know, we make quick snap decisions on things that just aren't true or aren't realistic.
Well, you know, you bring up so many different topics that are so critical, and I want to share two very brief anecdotes with you to show, I think, a commonality of spirit. When my son, who's now in his mid-30s and a law enforcement officer in the West, he was in middle school and heard a presentation by Greenpeace on the devastating deforestation of South America, in Brazil in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And then the teacher, without really preparing the students on how to write a letter to a public body, asked the kids to write their reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my son, being the passionate young man that he was, much like your own son, wrote a letter saying, you know, this is incredibly thoughtless, and a disaster for not just Brazil, but for the planet at large.
Wow.
Respiration is so important. The processing of carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide mm-hmm. into oxygen is so critical for the life forces of the planet. And he signed it, Your Enemy, Ocean.
Oh.
And the way I found out about this was I got a call from a teacher saying that my son has written an incredibly terrible letter, and the teacher was requesting a conference for us to discuss this. So I thought, you know, this is so unusual because my son mm-hmm. is very reticent and shy and nothing like his father in that sense. He's not an outspoken young man at all. So I was really taken aback. I mean, what could he have written mm-hmm. that would have somehow impressed the teacher this way? I go in to talk to her, and she, you know, she hands me this letter. And, you know, since I agree that the devastation done by casual lumbering, especially in the Brazilian rainforest, mm-hmm. is terrible.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You know, I said, let me ask you a question. Did you discuss with the students how to write a letter to the UN? Did you discuss, you know, anything about how to address a public body like that, or did you just say, okay, now that you're angry, please write something?
Mm-hmm.
And she admitted that, well, yeah, you know, they heard the speech and she asked them to write something. And I said, well, you know, you're talking to 12-year-olds and 11-year-olds. You know, these are young students who, they speak their mind plainly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't know the artifice.
Or the finesse.
either way, I'll go with your word.
well.
to write this in a more professional,
sure.
business-like manner. So I said, you know, I can't understand why you're surprised at this, because I'm sure that there's some passion leaking through several of the letters of young people. Now, maybe
sure.
My son's use of your enemy.
I think it's great. I mean, that's the one thing that I'm always concerned about, is that we as parents are always trying to stifle our kids with the intent of not offending anyone. But we go to such an extreme that we also inhibit them in their way to actually communicate something that will amount to something.
Well, needless to say, I backed him up 100%.
Well, good for you.
The other point that I wanted to make to you, mm-hmm. My friend Susan, is that many of us who've been around these battles for decades, I'm approaching my sixth decade, and many of us are more than you might imagine concerned that there's not enough 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds out there.
Oh, absolutely.
Although we all know why that is, because they're making their initial foray into the world, they're trying to establish themselves, they're maybe starting young families.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's all, you know, part of the normal human condition that
sure.
20 and 30-year-olds are busy trying to start a life, and they're not as active, typically, as people in their 40s and 50s and 60s. And so that's all very normal. But when I heard your story about how you helped your son utilize that enthusiasm, that energy, that drive,
mm-hmm.
that sense that we are on this planet together, that unless we help each other, unless we help the planet, there's mm-hmm. not going to be a planet left.
Correct.
And I absolutely support you. And, you know, when many of us older activists talk with, you know, all right, what are you doing to bring younger people in? Well, Susan, you covered your base.
Well, I thank you. I do want to stop you there and say one thing though. See, I don't view it that way. I actually think that my son helped me. I mean, he reminded me.
Well, he got you motivated. So
he brought to light how little I was involved and how quick I was to just write something off. Now, of course, I will bring it around because now my son's 13, and to get him active and passionate outside of his computer games, I'm like, what happened to the little boy? There is an ebb and a flow. I get it now that I'm actually really ingrained in the political process, and I say, oh, you want to do this? Oh, you want to go there? He's like, no, Mom, I'm good. And I'm like, what? So I'm now pulling him back into it. But I agree with you. I think that it's a cliche, but it's a true cliche that if we don't inspire and educate the younger generation, you know, we are going to be a dying species, and that to me is paramount.
Well, it's always important to me as a journalist to help people understand. The ancients used to basically focus very much on character development by telling the stories of those who were noble,
mm-hmm.
of those who evinced the highest societal standards. When I invite guests who are activists, I want people to understand what took them from being just another consumer, minding their own business, trying to live a life, trying
mm-hmm.
to support their family, because God knows that's hard enough. That is hard enough and literally takes more time than most people have in a day just to
yes.
take care of that.
Oh, absolutely.
So I have to have just so much respect for people who, in addition to trying to live a good life,
mm-hmm.
in addition to trying to take care of their family, invest time and energy and attention to trying to help out the world. So I think that's invaluable, and I thank you so much for sharing that part of your story.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you about some of the contemporary issues that that fill the Facebook lines and help them sell their ads, and of course that amaze so many of us day by day. Now I have been a practicing human now for these 50 plus years, and
mm-hmm.
and in many of those years I have had a sexual thought or two, as have
uh-huh.
most people. Now I find the fact that the current Republicans want to refight the battle from the last century of whether humans should have access to birth control, I find that absolutely amazing, and am puzzled beyond words as to why they think this is a good strategy.
It's a terrible strategy, and it's a strategy that is backfiring on them. But it's not something that is new. I mean, for as long as I can remember, especially within the state of Florida, they've always been fighting this battle. I think the difference between years ago and now is that there's a lot more people that think like that, this is the strategy, this is what's going to separate us from them, this is what's going to bring our base in. I think, you know, a few decades ago when the Christian right kind of took over the Republican Party, they decided that's what their calling was. That's the true direction of the party. And unfortunately, as you see right now, it's a very torn party. I mean, it, you know, I have the majority of my family are Republicans. And I could say when I have and I don't really talk politics too much with my family.
Sure.
They usually avoid me like the plague because they know that it's not an easy win if they take me on. So we don't talk about it, but I do ask them, how do they feel about this? And there's not one of them right now that is confident in the direction of where they're going as a party. And on top of it, we've seen it over in the past couple months, a difference in people who, and I don't think this is necessarily party related, because I've been very big on Facebook right now pushing the fact that this is not a Republican issue, this is not a liberal issue or a Democratic issue, this is an issue for women. And I have to tell you, my entire life I've been fighting the issues of equality for women, which is why I'm so passionate about the equality for the LGBT community, because I can relate to that. From a very early age on, I discovered that there's not only an inequality, but an acceptable inequality. You know, I worked in radio when I first started out after college, and I was probably a lone girl in a sea of a man's world. Then I went into construction for a while, and same scenario there. Fortunately, I've learned how to curse like the best of them. But the point is that this movement right now extends beyond politics. I think women are just tired. They're just feeling enough. And I think what's happened is the majority of us have all reached the same age, just like myself, and said, you know what? I'm tired of sitting by and letting somebody else do it for me. I'm not going to take it anymore. And that's what I think you're seeing with Rush Limbaugh. You're seeing that with our state politicians. You're seeing that at the federal level. Women are just reaching out. The Susan G. Komen fiasco, we said it enough. It's not about politics. It's about our health care. It's about our life.
And that was the part one of the interview with Susan Nylon, a tremendous broadcaster, an activist, a journalist out of the Sarasota area. Make sure you tune into her shows, which are available not only if you're in the Sarasota area, broadcast over the air, AM, FM, but also through the Internet. Before we get on to our next guest, I also want to mention and congratulate the people of EMMA, the emergency medical assistants, who also received the Blood, Sweat, and Tears Award at the Palm Beach County Now Susan B. Anthony Awards Luncheon for the fine work that they do fundraising to help women get access to abortions when they need them. They said the organization was founded on the basis that an abortion should not be unavailable simply because of lack of money. And they're now helping over 300 women a year get access. A fantastic organization. Also, Planned Parenthood was recognized for the fine work that they do. So I know you'll join with me in sending your congratulations to Judith Seltzer, the winner of the Susan B. Anthony Award, the Outstanding Feminist of 2012, and also the good people of EMMA for their reception of the Blood, Sweat, and Tears Award. Another story that you're probably not going to hear much on the commercial news is that the San Onofre nuclear plant in California has been failing tests of the pipe integrity, and the NRC is trying to figure out why those pipes are degrading so fast. Hard to believe, huh? Oh, I also want to thank my associate, my co-producer, Mickey Royce, for all the work that she did. She dragged herself back to health. She had a bit of a health issue, and she's now back hitting on all eight cylinders, and she was out there at the Palm Beach Now Susan B. Anthony Awards Luncheon and had a great time and was talking to lots of good people, all future guests to the show, that's for sure. Also, a professor has said that the low-level contamination is probably more dangerous than a single dose of high radiation. Grasshoppers with deformed wings, gray eyes not red, birds with abnormal sperm, and strange large tumors have been found revisiting Chernobyl, a nuclear disaster site of epic proportions. The nuclear crisis in Japan has renewed interest in the 1986 nuclear meltdown in Chernobyl in Ukraine. Science correspondent Miles O'Brien traveled to the site of the world's worst nuclear disaster shortly before its 25th anniversary. Miles O'Brien. Mendelevsky's colleague, Tim Musso, believes that animals are the key to settling the debate over the long-term health effects of Chernobyl. He and his team have spent more than a decade studying birds in the Chernobyl region and beyond. Timothy Musso says, the University of South Carolina, but it's clear that this low-level contamination is probably more dangerous in the long run than having a single hot spot. Miles O'Brien says, in the contaminated area, there are half as many species and one-third the number of birds you would normally expect. Their brains are smaller. 40% of the male-born swallows have abnormal sperm. 1 in 5 have strange colored plumage that makes it hard for them to attract mates. There are unusual beak deformations and large tumors that scientists have never seen before. What, if anything, can we extrapolate between these bird populations and the populations of barn swallows and humans? He would argue, you know, we're all animals, and the birds are actually more similar to us than dissimilar. And now we've got our next guest on, so let me bring her in. Welcome, Tara.
Hello?
Hello, Tara, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, who's this?
This is John. I'm from Central Florida.
Hi, John.
I was listening. How are you doing? I was listening. I thought I'd call in since you're a fellow Floridian. I was wondering, have you ever heard of the coffee party?
Yes, I have, John. Are you involved in it?
Yes, I am. Are you?
No, I've been trying to do my bit to get the word out of all the progressive actions, and that's one arena I haven't worked in. I've been working with the Progressive Coalition, who's trying to move the Democratic Party in a democratic direction. But tell us a little bit about the coffee party.
Well, it's a coalition of a lot of different people who want to get action out of our government that we're not getting now. And I was just, you know, I'm a Democrat, as you are, and I've seen the things that have gone on in this state, and we really need to get reorganized, you know, because when you got Slicky Ricky up there, man, I mean, it's just, it's a nightmare. The coffee party is working, as are a lot of movements, towards trying to get the government to allow us our redress listen to our wants and our needs to try to get rid of the problems like Citizens United and all of the sanctioning that they're putting in through the Congress of people's constitutional rights and First Amendment rights. I heard something last night that was absolutely devastating, that, you know, the Article 5 provision in the Constitution that allows us to have a redress, a convention.
John, hold that thought 1 minute.
Sure.
I need to bring in another guest, okay?
Okay.
Hello, is this Tara?
Yes. Sorry to have some technical difficulties there.
Oh, sorry to hear that. Jonathan, thanks so much for that report on the coffee party. Let me ask you to give us a call back next week, okay? I'll make a little time for a call-in, okay?
All right, thanks.
Thanks very much. Tara.
Yes, how are you?
Very good, dear, very good. Tell us, what got you involved first in the progressive movement? What took you from a consumer to an activist?
Well, thanks for having me on your show. I'm glad I could finally get on. I'm glad this finally happened.
It's our pleasure.
I think for me, what happened is, I've always been very political. I've always been very politically aware. I've always paid attention. I mean, I think I remember even back in high school, I think it was the, must have been the 92 elections. It was my senior year. And I
Good for you.
And I remember convincing my parents to, it was actually a competition between my brother and I to vote. I think my brother wanted Bill Clinton, and I think I wanted Ross Perot, just because, you know, he was the underdog. And I'll have to make a caveat for that I was only 17 at the time. But
sure.
I remember being motivated back then. And I've always, of course, paid attention. And I think what probably got me motivated was just seeing the political climate and the narrative shift. I mean, it took a hard shift, and I don't mean just a hard right shift. It just took a very direct turn, and it seemed to be controlled by certain groups and certain powers that be. You know, that's a loose way to put it. And I just didn't like that, because it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous for any society to be spoon-fed your thoughts and spoon-fed your ideas. And, you know, here I am, just regular, you know, Jane citizen, and I'm finding information that contradicts the things I see and hear. And I'm finding information that contradicts common, you know, knowledge, or, you know, knowledge, common knowledge in quotations, that people believe. And it just scared me. And so it was probably a slow organic process, but I just started really brushing up on things that were going on and paying a lot of attention. And anytime I heard something that my ears kind of perked up, or either didn't set right or sounded very sensational or sounded really, really good or really, really bad, I looked into it. And I ended up trying to disseminate information to friends and family and people that I knew or people in my community, and it just started to kind of grow from there. And
well, I'll tell you, your posts online are excellent. You always have good information, and you're always very attentive to the current, the next dilemma coming down the pike. Tell us, what are you working on now, Tara?
Actually, it's funny that you should ask. I think of a little bit of breaking news for you. I'll break the news on your show. How about that?
Cool, fantastic.
Actually, it's funny because I heard you talking earlier about Palm Beach County Now. I think that you're pretty affiliated with them.
Oh, yeah.
They're soon to be a Martin County chapter of Now.
Fantastic.
I've been talking to the national headquarters, and I have a core group of girls, and I'm sure you know them. Who
God bless every one of them.
We're going to be the charter members of the Martin County chapter of Now. We're still in the works. We don't have our membership, our chapter membership, just yet. But I'm in work.
You count on our support.
Thank you very much. And you know, I have to say, I also want to take this opportunity to publicly and very sincerely thank Mr. Rush Limbaugh for our Martin County chapter of Now, because if it weren't for him, I would not have been compelled to even look into starting the chapter. It was just his derision of the group as in general really incensed me, and it made me it made me look them up, and then I said, well, you know, the closest chapter to us is like almost 40 miles away. There's no reason for that. So I contacted Now, and they were really excited. They love their Florida chapters, and I'm looking forward to working with Palm Beach County's chapter for some guidance and some, you know, some sister events and things like that. So I will keep you posted.
Well, the leadership of Palm Beach Now, I'll tell you, you know, I've met many of these young ladies, and I've had several of them on the air here, M&A Dillick and Meredith Ackman. It's the best kind of human beings you'd ever want to know. And, you know, I have been so fortunate. I have a wonderful wife of almost 42 years. I had a wonderful mother. I have two wonderful daughters. To see women attacked this way, the way the right has chosen to do this, it is, they've essentially escalated out of the ballpark. It's incomprehensible how they have been treating women. And to think that civilized people would do this kind of things, it's appalling. It's beyond words appalling. And I salute you for taking that anger, taking that energy, and doing something constructive with it. God has blessed you.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I think for, like, especially women my age and especially women younger, you know, you grow up and you hear about the 70s and you know who Gloria Steinem is and, you know, who Susan B. Anthony was, and you feel like, wow, you know, these women, they did all these great things, and, you know, we are sort of reaping the benefits of the fights that were fought in our name and for us. And we sort of come into the world or into society with a certain level of taking for granted, you know, those rights and those freedoms, and not taking for granted in a bad way, but taking for granted.
No, no, I know what you mean.
The type of taking for granted that they would be happy to see. And so you really don't think that there are still issues. You think that things are settled matters and that things are settled law. And all of a sudden, you know, you have the past month, which, you know, I have to say, I sort of have two very visceral responses when I see the things that are going on. You know, of course, one part of me is just, you know, revolted and indignant at these attacks, but the other part is a little bit grateful. And what I mean by that is it's really re-energized and reignited women to have to stop and say, no, 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 wait a minute, you know. And, you know, there's sort of a kinship that women have that you don't have to talk about, you don't have to say, because it doesn't need to be said, but when issues like this come up, it sort of reinvigorates that. So in a way, it's going to, of course, in the long run, this is going to benefit women, because it's just going to remind us that, you know, we need to stay vigilant and be vigilant. But it's going to reinforce these issues that have been settled and should be settled. It's just going, when all the dust clears and all the crazy rhetoric settles, you know, the people who started this fight are going to be very sorry. And, you know, I think everybody sees the long shot of how this is going to turn out, you know. And some of the, you know, in some of the more stubborn parts of the country, or some of the more stubborn legislators or things like that, who obviously just aren't getting the memos, you know, it may be a longer, more protracted battle for them and more painful, you know, I dare say. But in the end, I think it will benefit women, because it would put, you know, more reinforcement into these issues being settled, you know, like Martin County chapter of now, you know, that won't go anywhere. That will be there, and that would be a direct result of this. So that's a good thing.
Yep, yep. I used to make a joke that presidents like Nixon and Reagan and the Bushes did an awful lot for progressives, for the anti-war parties, for people who were really concerned about the Constitution, because without the insults that these people provided, they did a lot to energize people, and I think that you're drawing that same conclusion, that the positive side of this incredible, ignorant, savage of a person is that it's making people realize that the fight continues. You know, the turn of the last century, the turn of the last century, Margaret Sanger had to smuggle condoms into this country in wine bottles.
Yeah.
And so when these people want to discuss, you know, the sin of birth control, my God, you know, what little perspective do they have? Now, you know, maybe you could take a really cynical view and say, well, you know, this is all just about party building. This is all just rah-rah to drum up their base. But, you know, if you take what they say at face value, these are people that really want to live in another century. They have more in common with the Taliban than they do with contemporary American society.
Absolutely. And it's very anathema to America in general. You know, as a country, you know, especially, you know, the GOP, you know, they hang
live
their hat
and let
on
live.
Small government.
Small government.
Yeah. But small government until, you know, it's inside my reproductive organs, and then it's, you know, as big as it needs to be. But, you know, I think that, you know, the GOP, they overshot a little, you know, and I think there's always this ceremonious, you know, I know better than you and all that. But I think that on it, on the face, I think there are some who are just doing the bidding of special interest groups, you know, the anti-abortion lobby, in some cases the groups of religious lobbyists. But I think that there really are, and I hate to say this because I really don't want to believe it. You know, I tend to shy away from hyperbole, but there is a small part of me that believes that there is a section of this party that really has a disdain for women having a say-so over their bodies, having a say-so over their family planning choices. And I think that there's a part of the religious sect of that group that really feels that women are not entitled to these rights and these freedoms. They believe it was perhaps an error in our progress as a country and a society that women attained them in the first place, and it's their job to take us back. You know, I don't think that speaks for the party. I wouldn't make a blanket indictment of the Republican Party, but I think there's a segment of the party who fully believes that.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. I've met many of them myself. So if people want to get in touch with you about the startup of NOW in the Martin County area, can they get in touch with you via Facebook? What's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
There's a couple of ways. Facebook, my account's private, but you can certainly find me on Facebook. I mean, if anybody knows you, they can find me through you under my name. Or you can find me on Twitter, and my handle is WTARA75, and my Twitter account's public, so you can find me on Twitter. And also, if someone would like to email me, my email address is POLI, as in Poly Politics, POLITARA75@gmail.com. You can get in touch with me any of those ways, and I would be happy to entertain anyone who wants to become a member. We are actively seeking membership.
Okay, great. Well, Tara, thank you so much for joining us, and I know you're going to be coming back again. You've got much more you could tell us about the other things going on. Is there one more thought you want to leave us with?
No, I just want to say thank you for having me on, and I look forward to coming on again. I know we had talked about coming on closer to the middle of April when I'll be doing some talks on Amendment 8 around the community, and I would love to come on and discuss Amendment 8 with you and your audience if you have me.
Absolutely. Anytime, my dear. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Richard.
You take care then. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And ladies and gentlemen, I think we've got our final guest of the evening, Miss Harriet Lemon. 1 second, please. Welcome, Harriet.
Well, welcome. Thank you for having me, too. I've been listening to all of these very interesting and fantastic women.
Oh, I've been so fortunate. I've had so many wonderful women guests. This is a home for progressive voices, and I want to welcome you, Harriet. And I know you've been on the front lines for a long time. Harry, can you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in the world of progressive broadcasting?
Well, it goes back even further than that. As you know, I was like a little girl when I started because I listened to all of the people you've had on, and my experiences have been great and many. I was 10 years old when I actually started watching the state convention. I'm from the state of Maine.
Uh-huh.
And my great mentor was Edward Muskie, and a good friend of mine, too. And as I grew a little older, I got into my early 20s. I actually started volunteering. I worked for congressional and presidential, and it was legislative, and you name it. I did get out the vote, and I had a lot of high school students under me. I had 200 volunteers. I was working on a congressional campaign, and I was working for Carter and Mondale. And we did such a phenomenal job. As you know, the state of Maine was just a little bit of controversy with the caucuses that they had this year with the GOP Republican chair, Charlie Webster. Well, Charlie Webster and I were sworn in together on the same day into the legislature. He was a Democrat when he first came in, and he turned around to me because I was surrounded by men, and here I am, a very young girl. I'm only in my 30s. Now, women, you know that that's pretty hard for women to get elected. I ran against a former superintendent of schools, and I beat him 2-1. It was phenomenal. I mean, I was, like, shocked. I didn't even believe it. But anyway, he's standing there, and he looks at me, and he says, "Hey, why aren't you barefoot and pregnant, you know, at home?" And oh, no, the first thing he said was, how come you're barefoot and pregnant, and how did you get here? And I said, "Let me tell you something, Charlie. I worked as hard as you did to get here. And amongst all of you that, and remember, they're all men, amongst all of you thorns, I am the rose in the middle, and I'm the one that smells good." He didn't know what to say. He couldn't talk. He was the most chauvinistic person. And I truly believe that he would stoop to any level because he turned from a Democrat to a Republican. And that's when he became the horrible chauvinist pig. He used to wear neckties with pigs on them. And so you have to understand, I understand the makeup of these people in Maine, and never in the history that I was there that I ever saw so much corruption. And I truly don't believe that Mitt Romney has won, I think, 4 of those races that I can mention that he did not win. I think there was corruption of some sort. And I think if we look into it further, we'll see that there was corruption. So, you know, there was Waldo County. Remember they used to say, "Maine, where's Waldo?"
Yeah.
So there were some missing people. There was a snowstorm, and some of those people did not go out that day to go to the caucus. So they had it a day later. He had no right to declare them. They hadn't even voted. So, you see, I got into it, and when I did this, I was working for the Get Out the Vote. I did such a phenomenal job, which, you know, I just figured I was doing my job, and that's what I do. Well, they came over and asked me if I would like to be a candidate for the legislature.
Wow.
I said, "Oh, my God, I'm the only person behind the person pushing them, never the one in front." And so we sat down with my family at the time, and we discussed it because it is a tremendous sacrifice. And anybody who does run for office, let me say to you, my hat is off to you because it is a huge sacrifice to your family and to what happens to you in your life. You do have to give up so much. And so we discussed it, and I said, "Okay, you're going to do it." And that's what I did. I became a legislator. I lasted 10 years or more, and then I moved here to Florida. And when I moved here to Florida, I immediately looked for the Democratic Progressive Party, and I was, you know, at that time there was a few of them, and I became president and vice president and regional rep for the Democratic Women's Club. I became a member of the Democratic Executive Committee, and I worked on, with the seniors down here as one of my job, and I wrote an article about the high cost of growing old. You know, down here it's just so horrible for older citizens. And then I started getting asked, "Would you like to do a radio show?" Because in Maine, I did a television show. And so, sure, it was definitely where I wanted to be. I would definitely do radio. So I went on the radio, and I started doing this Voice of the People. It's really funny. My Voice of the People name has been with me. I've been on the air almost 10 years now. And I also used it as my campaign slogan when I ran Voice of the People. I see that so many people like you have the voice of the progressive activist and voices for all of the people. I see in the show Voices, everybody uses that name, and I've been using it for years. And I'm so glad that you all complimented my name of my show. But I have such a good time being a progressive, and I have to tell you, I am the voice of the Occupy Wall Street. I have them on all the time, and I talk about them all the time. And I think people have to understand they cannot give up. They must not give up. And I know that they were just there in New York. They were taking back Liberty Square and celebrating 6 months of the Occupy Wall Street. And hopefully they're going to do this once a month. And then, of course, the spring Occupy will be coming up very soon, and they need people to volunteer and to go to Washington the 1st of April. I think if I didn't have a job, I would be one of the first in line to go. I think they are an amazing group of people, and thank God for them, because the 99% who came up with that is an absolute great expression, and I'm so thrilled because people like myself and the middle class that are out there, we're dying thanks to the GOP and the Republican Party, the party of no, that doesn't really care about women. And, you know, women, let me tell you something. On all my show, I talk about Rush Limbaugh for years now. Well, I don't even know how many years I've talked about it. I have a one-way ticket for him to go anywhere he wants. I thought maybe he could go to maybe Africa, where they don't have contraception, and the women are starved, and they're beaten, and they're killed. Maybe that's where he should go. But, you know, I feel that this man has done more detriment to women. I would be happy to take over his radio station. I would be happy to be the voice of the party of the progressives on his station and all of those sponsors. You know, the point is that this man has been calling us feminazis for so many years, and we've done nothing about it. We've allowed the conservative radio, the right-wing radio, to say whatever they want to desecrate the women as long as I can remember. And I've gotten so angry about it on the air. I said, I never use those kind of words. They use the words, I'm going to be blunt. They call us douchebags. They call us feminazis. They use the word, as this young lady just said before, Tara, you know, a small government inside your uterus. This is absolutely just not called for. We're not sluts, we're not prostitutes, we're not any of those things. It's funny, we can't call men that. And the interesting part of all of this, contraception for women is not covered by insurance, but Viagra is for men. There's some inconsistency, and there has always been. I served on the banking and insurance committee when I was in Maine, and there was always inconsistency for women in health care. There continues to be inconsistency for women, even to today. This is 2012, and we still haven't got any equality. The ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, has never been passed in the state of Florida. I voted for it in 1982 in the state of Maine. What is wrong with this state that the men of this state and the Republicans of this state cannot give women equal rights? I don't understand it. I don't understand the policies, and I don't understand the corruption. You know and I know that this is corruption county. Palm Beach County is corruption. This state is so corrupt. We have a governor who absolutely, I call him Medicare fraud, conflict of interest, Scott. He is, without a doubt, a criminal as far as I'm concerned. When you steal money from Medicaid and Medicare, that you are such a crook to hurt the senior citizens of this state, it is outrageous. And yet people voted for him. And yet they've now given him a piece of legislation that they call it the King's legislation. Gives him more power and more power and more power. So I think we've got some real problems here. What do you think?
Well, I couldn't disagree at all. And I think that the best approach, in my belief, is we get people informed. A lot of people fallaciously assume that if they ignore government, government ignores them. And that is so far from the truth. And I agree with Tara insofar as when you have these excessive comments, these ridiculous statements, these absurd 18th century manners and gutter politics, it does wake up more people. And it's a shame it takes that. You know and I know, unless we participate in government, it's not a democracy. And when we leave it to the oligarchs, when we leave it to the corporate...
I ran for county commissioner. I ran against Warren Newell here in Palm Beach County. I won the election on a Tuesday night. I had over 200 volunteers. We worked our butts off. And I 24/7. There was never a day that we did not work. And this was absolutely ridiculous. I won on a Tuesday night, and on Wednesday night, he has the right to go in there and say he got more absentee ballots. Now, I don't know if you know Bev Harris from Black Box Voting was here. She had the FBI. She absolutely went after Teresa Lepore to try to get her to give her a forensic audit. She wouldn't do it. We tried everything in our power to find out what happened to those absentee ballots. Now, those Democrats seem to be thinking this is the only way that we can vote is by absentee ballots. Well, there is some problems with absentee ballots in other states, and I'm very concerned about what's going to happen. It's a good way, like he did, fix it up. How does he, the last day, get 700 absentee ballots and I get zero? I made 10,000 to 20,000 phone calls in a matter of a few weeks, and not one person even knew who he was. So why would they even do an absentee ballots for him, and let alone would I not get any? So I had Bev Harris on the show a couple of weeks ago, and she said, Harriet, that is an impossibility. There is no way on God's earth that he won that election. And I have been told by strangers, reporters, everybody, that he couldn't have won that election. And so nobody does anything. We are so apathetic. We are so lazy that we will not get up and do anything to fight for our rights. You know, there's a war on women, but I really believe this man didn't like me being a woman running against him. I was a stupid moron. I didn't know anything. But I showed him and everybody else out there that this man was a crook. I am the one that exposed him. He took a $280,000 bonus. He claimed he had no office, no desk, no chair, no shingle. And then he said, I said, well, where did you get the $280,000? Oh, from my office. I said, ladies and gentlemen, I thought I heard him say his office. I said, did he not just say he didn't have one? He didn't know what to say. He couldn't talk. My point is that he would stoop that low because he knew he had to get all that money that he made deals with, and then he ended up in jail. It is a very difficult job. People don't understand how difficult this is. Temptations are so great when you're in politics that people offer you. I was considering running for Congress, and if I tell you, my whole being changed because people started coming to me with all kinds of shady deals. We'll get you this, if you do that, we'll do this and this. Men were making passes, you know, the power thing, you know, how women make passes at men. Well, they were doing it to me.
I
so
had
I
an interesting,
understand that.
I had an interesting experience myself. I did a lot of work for architects, engineers, and urban planners, and that put me in touch with a lot of PR and advertising people. And I was working with an advertising agency doing multimedia for them, and we were talking to a candidate who was running for the school board down in Miami. And in the process of the interview, as I was preparing the multimedia, the head of the PR company was turning to this person and asking different questions about how they saw their candidacy. And finally the person says, well, listen, you know, what makes you want to run for the school board? I mean, there's no money in it. And the person turned to her and said, oh, the graft. That's the only reason. I don't give a hoot about kids.
Oh,
and we were both shocked. I mean, we're pretty jaded people, fairly cynical. But for this person to just say, hey, it's strictly the graft. It said really all you need to say. And unfortunately, Florida's elections, as you know, have been just fraught with corruption. And when the Democratic Party decides not to fight, when they don't have any spirit,
yeah,
backbone,
how does that get you?
Well, it gets us what we've got right now, basically a one-party
exactly
state.
Exactly my point.
But there's good news coming. There are Democratic activists. There are progressive Democrats in office right now. And I heard from a little bird at that Now event this afternoon that a Florida progressive maybe moving up in party leadership, and that would be a real refreshing thing in Florida Democratic politics.
Well, hallelujah, because we need somebody there with a backbone. Unfortunately, we haven't got a whole lot of voice because they don't listen to us. Our 39 members of the Democratic Party in the legislature have no say. They really don't. They really just sit there, and they can't do much of anything. And unfortunately, that's a sad situation. I ran for the legislature here. I know how corrupt they are. Those 527s need to go. Campaign finance reform has to go into play one of these days if they have a guts to do it. We need to stop the pension plans for our Congress, which would save us billions of dollars. They've got to stop giving them all this great health care when we don't get anything. There's so many things that need to be changed, but nobody has the guts to get up off the floor and do it.
Well,
and
Harriet,
I feel sorry. They're afraid. They're so afraid of people. They're so afraid.
We've got only 1 minute left. I want to thank you so much for joining us. I know clearly you have the guts to speak your mind, and that's fantastic. When can our audience hear your show?
You can hear my show, Voice of the People. It's on WE Network, WEINetwork.com. I'll be on Tuesday. I'll be having Irv Schlossberg. He's the state representative. And it'll be on Tuesday at 2 o'clock. Please listen every week. You can chat in the chat room. You can certainly call me anytime and ask me any question you want.
So that's Tuesday at 2 o'clock, and the show is called what, The Voice of the People?
Voice of the People.
Okay, well, thanks so much. Appreciate you joining
us. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay,
nice to be interviewed, not being interviewer. Thank you.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's tonight's show.
It's Tuesday at 2 o'clock, and the show is called
Wednesday. Thanks so much for joining us. Tune in next week for the Peace Show. We'll be interviewing peace activists from across Florida. Thank you. On behalf of Detroit, co-producer myself, tune in.